It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azure Talon? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
All right. Hopefully this should work good, because remember the thing where your video would freeze up?
Yeah.
Except only for me.
Right.
Not for anybody else. It happened the other night at gaming, just with one of the people, but they had the same thing. And just the other day, I got a thing from Zoom that they're going to make a new process where you have to be within 9 months of the current version. And so these two things combined, such that 5 minutes ago, I was like, maybe I should look for an update on Zoom. And I did, and there was one. And one of the things it said was, fixed occasional issue where people with AMD processors would have video freeze up. And I'm like, that's me. So hopefully that's going to solve it.
Yeah.
We'll see. So while I was waiting for you, not because you were late, you're in fact significantly early, but it's me, so I'm always much, much earlier. I saw a commercial that I've seen a few times that I have issues with.
Okay. This feels like a therapy session or something, like I'm your therapist.
Yeah. Dude, I talk to so few people these days. This is it. This is my social life right here.
Okay.
I do have to say, in general, I'm angry at Febreze.
Oh.
Just across the board. Because
Febreze killed your parents, so...
That's actually has nothing to do with that. I feel like they did me a favor there. You know, it was an inheritance issue, but no, it's not that. It's not
okay.
I mean, several products and companies have killed my parents, and most of them I'm not angry at all. Unrelated. But Febreze made a very cool product. It was called Febreze.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
Okay.
You would take it. It didn't smell like anything. And you would spray it places where things smelled, and it made it smell less. And it worked. It was crazy. Like, how did that happen? But it did it. And they have, I know they have a little CGI, like, dramatization, but I don't know if that's real or not. But it works. This is the thing. But now they're like, nah, let's just make Febreze everything. Let's just have Febreze be another air freshener company, is what it is. So we have 12 different ways you can do it this week. We'll have 12 more next week, and they all have special fun scents. And you can buy the unscented one if you can find it and add a premium. So it's really annoying. I hate them for it. I'm like, you had a thing, stick to it. And I mean, I get like Oreo, similar thing, you know, like Oreo's good. Why you got to make all these crazy Oreos? But you can still just buy Oreos. It is remarkably hard to just find Febreze, such that I fucked it up when I recently tried to buy some. And I bought Febreze that smells of sky and clean linen, which is like people used heavily scented laundry detergent on some sheets, and after they were clean, shoved them up at your nose so hard they landed in your brain. It's not good. Anyway, I'm not here to talk about that.
Oh,
in general, I'm here to talk about something more specific, which is Febreze car fresheners, little Febreze car things. Febreze car used to have a kind of cool commercial, I thought, which is where they would take a car and just fill it with nasty smelling bullshit. Sometimes literally bullshit, but I mean, just like old, you know, dirty socks and old food wrappers and crap like that. And then they would put this Febreze car thing in there, and then they would blindfold people and have them get into the car and asked how it smelled to them. And it was funny because you watch them surrounded by, because it was always like a minivan that had three rows and they put them in the middle row and like everything else was a disaster. They'd be like, oh, it's so nice in here. It's so fresh. And like, I'm sure it was bullshit, but I was like, ah, it's cute, whatever. But now we got a weird one. Have you seen this one, people? I'm like a 90s comic. Have you seen this thing lately? They do a commercial where they show you cars turning on. And like you hear, and they say, this is the sound of freedom. And already not on board, but I understand. This is a very American thing. And the car is freedom. I hate it, but I get it. It's a staple. It's a thing. And then they show you a picture of the air freshener and they say, and this is the smell of freedom. To which I say, fucking what? Like, what? What is that? What? What does that mean?
Do not know.
Because, and it's not like, okay. Hypothetically, this would still be super dumb. But if they made a scent of Febreze air freshener that specifically smelled like car, like, okay. I mean, because the metaphor is car equals freedom. Which, again, hate that metaphor. Understand where it comes from. It is an established thing in this country specifically. By the transitive property, car air freshener equals car? It's terrible, is what I'm saying. It's awful. If we can just bring this one thing to the masses to understand, is that Febreze car air freshener commercial is awful. Stop them before they kill again.
So one more to add to your list of unimportant things that you can get very passionate about.
I only get passionate about the unimportant ones.
That's what you keep saying. So
yep. I'll
just add this to the list.
Not that I couldn't spend a fucking double length episode ranting about goddamn Texas and their abortion ban right now, but that's not our kind of show. Nope. We focus on how shitty air freshener commercials are. They also got one. They got one for their like spray, like you spray it in the air. Again, not what Febreze was supposed to be for, but that's now a thing. And in the commercial, their big thing is Febreze air freshener is better. You know why? Because other air fresheners use artificial propellants to spray it, which that is a bad thing. They don't specify like it's bad for the environment, just like it you wouldn't like it is artificial propellants. But what Febreze does, and while you're hearing this, they show a picture inside the can of Febreze and they show the section that doesn't have any Febreze and there's just like arrows pointing and it says it uses the pressure of the air around you to propel the scent. I didn't hear that, but exactly. I saw your mouth. And it said the right word, which is what?
I don't understand. I mean,
I don't. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And I suppose there is a way to do that, but then I don't.
Yeah.
Are they saying the pressure outside the can is greater than the pressure inside the can? But there's stuff in the can under
pressure.
Pressure, you would presume.
Or maybe it's the lesser pressure. I mean, like, I don't think they're lying that there's actually an artificial propellant in there. I mean, I think an actual thing is happening. I just think that is the worst way to possibly explain it.
Yeah. Get it.
Like, it would have been better if they're like, in each and every can, we have 100% all natural tiny wizard. And he waves his wand and...
Maybe one of our listeners knows how it works.
Yeah. If you're out there, you, all six of you, tell us how Febreze air fresheners work. And also tell us what freedom smells like.
What does freedom smell like? What do you think freedom smells like?
I mean, I'm not going anywhere good with it.
Why would I ask you that?
I got a couple of ideas and neither of them do I think are worthy of being recorded.
That's okay. I don't know where my head was just now.
They're not all horrific. Some of them are just very dumb and uninspired also. Some of them are also horrific. But nothing good. I mean, like bacon. That's the best one I can think of all the time. I don't know what freedom. I don't know. I mean, in theory, I mean, I was about to go into the whole freedom is an abstract concept and not a physical thing and therefore does not have a smell. But in theory, each and every one of us has a sense memory, assuming we have experienced something that felt like freedom to us at the time. We have a sense memory attached to a certain thing that does smell like freedom to us.
Sure.
That being said, I don't know what mine is, and I certainly don't know what anybody else's is. And I could see where the smell of car and car-related things could be the smell of freedom to certain people, aka Tracy Chapman. Fast car, drive out of here, you know. We got to make a decision. Tracy Chapman probably smells a car, or at least a fast car, and is like, smells like freedom. But again, I don't think that's what the Febreze, like, it's going to be really weird if there's somebody out there that, like, to me, freedom smells like lilac sunset. Like, that's a story. I want to hear how that became your smell of freedom, but I feel like it's not common. You know, floral cascade is probably not a wide-ranging smell of freedom for like a lot of people, or sky and clean linen.
I've got some competing ones.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah. There's a whole category of competing ones where it's like some smell from nature, like when I was a kid going out walking in the woods and stuff. But I think the top one in that category would have to be fall leaves. The smell of fall leaves smells like freedom, but also the smell of spent fireworks. You know, because we'll shoot fireworks off down at the farm, and it just smells like burnt gunpowder is what it smells like. But you know, you could say that smells like freedom. Well, there was a third one. Oh, and truck stops have a particular smell.
Of freedom.
Well, when I, you know, one of the things I really like to do actually when I'm traveling, and I like to travel by car, you know, road trips and stuff, is to stop at, you know, places. You just stop at a lot of truck stops. And I don't know, when I get out at a truck stop, doesn't even matter what time of day, but night is better. It just feels like, I don't know. You just suddenly, for me, whenever I experience that, I suddenly get a sense of, oh, I'm far away from home right now. You know, I'm on the road and I'm going somewhere and I don't have to be anywhere. I could change my plans right now and go to a different place. I mean, this all of that kind of hits me. I don't know if it's because of the trucks that are there, or I don't know what does it, but I always get a, it's not a nostalgic feeling really. It's, I don't know how to describe it, but that, that would be one of the, that would be one of the possible answers for me.
The smell of ladies and gentlemen, Joe Pera. Thank you very much. And now, he's going to, serenade us with, his own personal touch on the famous hit Warm Apple Night.
You gotta be like that.
The smell of freedom for me is the very unique smell of someone's last breath. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast.
This is our shtick right here. Everything.
This is the business. This is how we do it.
Yeah, they've experienced it all already.
If you don't like it, why the fuck are you listening? And if you do like it, what the fuck is wrong with you? I'm such a Muppet today. All right. For those of you just joining us, this is the last episode under the old regime.
Regime?
I was going to continue that metaphor out, but given the situation in Afghanistan right now, it does not sound fun.
Probably not.
Anyway, we're going to change the format slightly after this episode, assuming we can get two questions in this episode, which I believe in us. The hat has been barfing up little note cards. The hat is not going to do that anymore. We have a hat. It's magic in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And people, write in to that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. with whatever they want. And then the hat's going to forward it to us and we're going to read them. And then we're going to talk about them, except for when we don't. But for the moment, it's still done on little note cards, but we only got two left. So that's going to happen. So how's your week?
Tony.
I'm Tony. Hi, Tony.
I'm William. And this is episode 546. How was my week? Okay, so we watched The Hunger last night.
Did you?
We did.
No. We all need to back up here. So, apropos of absolutely nothing, last evening, William texts me a YouTube link and just says, "I have no words." And what he texts me is an old original theatrical trailer for the 80s vampire film The Hunger, which, based on future conversation, I believe he thought was a joke.
Well, I knew it wasn't a joke, but wow, was it? It was like if you made a trailer to make fun of early 80s trailers, it would look this.
It was the most 80s of trailers. And it's 80s. This movie is an 80s erotic horror, which is just a very specific thing. And it had all of the 80s and an announcer who was saying things that just amounted to, ooh, spooky, sexy, oh, spooky, but sexy, like for 3 minutes. But the thing is, The Hunger, admittedly, I haven't seen it in a while, but I have seen it multiple times, is one of the few good vampire movies out of the 20th century. The 20th century is most famous out of all its accomplishments for having almost exclusively absolute shit vampire movies. Not almost, no, like less than you could name on one hand decent ones, let alone good. And The Hunger is one of the good ones. And so I mentioned this to William. And William is like, but this man usually lies to me and this seems untenable. So what? And I'm like, no, it's for real. Although I haven't seen it in a while. And also in the process, I find out Trish, the producer, has not ever seen it. And I'm like, we're going to have to see that. Also, it's on HBO Max. So it's fine. So I'm like, great. And then I went on with my life. And apparently right then he was like, fucking wife, come here. We're doing something right now. We're watching The Hunger.
We watched it.
It wasn't exactly early in the evening when we had this conversation. So, but all right. So then you watched it. Let's go on.
Yeah. And I told my wife, I told Abby after we watched it, that I hate Tony now. But I got over it.
Not so good.
Well, okay. So
it's a weird ass movie. I mean, without a doubt.
The thing is, since I mean, I believed you that it was kind of a you know, like a an important vampire fiction work.
It was a seminal film, yes.
Exactly. So I thought it doesn't matter if I don't like it. It should be in my, you know, I should see it. And I wouldn't say that it's not, I wouldn't tell someone don't watch it. I mean, for one thing, it was very artistically done. Like it wasn't, you know what I mean? It was,
Oh yeah. It's to give you people perspective. There are three primary characters in it, and they are played by Susan Sarandon in the 80s, Catherine Deneuve, and David Bowie. And anytime David Bowie's in a movie in less than a cameo or in more than a cameo, there's a certain vibe. And this movie definitely has that vibe.
His performance was outstanding, by the way. Definitely, you know, that, you know, if you are have any interest in Bowie's acting, which, you know, he's done other, he did other things. He was in The Prestige. His acting
borders on flawless. I've never seen him act and not have it be amazing, which always kind of surprises me somehow.
But there were makeup effects involved here. That's very hard to act through that kind of thing. And he did it. And the makeup effects were very good. And yeah, it felt like a lot of times there was one scene where Catherine Deneuve, the way she was delivering her line, she was at a piano. She was playing, and I could have sworn her lines were written on the sheet music, and she was just reading it and sometimes looking back at whoever she was supposed to be talking to. It's like, come on, Catherine Deneuve, stop phoning it in. But, you know, and Susan Sarandon did a okay job. I'm not sure.
It's a little off type for her.
Yeah, a little. But,
not that she did badly, but she sort of, her career went on in a different direction, I think.
Yeah. You know, and it was doing a lot of things with camera and things and music and sound that I didn't like, but I did appreciate the effort. I truly did. I thought, oh, you know, that's actually pretty interesting what they're doing. I think it's terrible, but, you know, why not?
It's this. Some people might take issue with this, but I very much feel like Only Lovers Left Alive, the Tilda Swinton, Hiddleston one. You seen that one?
I think so.
You should watch that one. That's a recent one. I feel like that's the 21st century version of The Hunger. It's the Hunger is an art film.
Yeah.
And it's a very 80s art film. Yeah. So there's a lot of baggage attached to that. And you sort of can't get away from that fact.
Well, one of the things that the guy in the trailer kept saying was the word perverse. So I guessed there was probably homosexuality in the film. And that's so whenever there was
and a there scene, was. So, yeah.
Whenever there was a scene like that, at just the right moment, I would say out loud, perverse. And it made Abby laugh.
But it was the 80s. So I think it was exclusively or almost exclusively just girl homosexuality.
Oh,
because in the 80s that wasn't perverse, that was ew if it was two dudes. So, you know, so, we had to have the sexy version of perverse.
And I didn't
what is my hair doing?
As far as like the
I feathered it just for this 80s talk.
The mythos, so to speak, I didn't get it. I mean, yeah, it was vampire thing for sure, but it's like how does it work? Why is this happening? There was a lot of things that I didn't understand in terms of, I don't know. I didn't understand the ending, but I did appreciate the effort. I thought, yeah, this is, you know, I would be interested to see if someone wanted to take another crack at it. And I mean, I could see that. I could see that working. I feel the same way about The Lost Boys. I feel like there's a lot of potential there that even the original film didn't realize.
See, I think Lost Boys is just fun. I don't know that it's good, but it's fun. But again, it's a seminal thing. If you want to be watching vampires, and that's the 80s and 90s, and honestly 2000s for me, were all about getting my hands on any vampire movie I could and having almost all of them suck.
Yeah.
No pun intended. I don't know what it is. There were plenty that were made, but I didn't see a good one until, and people are going to get mad about this, the Coppola Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Yeah.
That was like the first decent one I remember seeing. And then once came out, and that's the thing. And I had to put up with my favorite vampire movies were very mediocre ones. In fact, for a long time in my top three was a movie called The Vampire Journals. That was a spinoff from the incredibly shitty Full Moon Studios Subspecies series, which was just garbage. But they did this one sort of spinoff movie called Vampire Journals that was okay, which meant it was one of my top three. And so
the song Bela Lugosi Is Dead was in the movie, which I think I'd heard before in another context. When I looked it up, it made it sound like the song kind of had made its debut in the movie, but maybe not. But do you know that song? It's pretty good.
I don't. I haven't watched this in quite a while.
It's from it's a punk rock song, but it's
pretty good. So yeah, if you're gonna be a student of vampire film, you have to do Lost Boys. You have to do the Coppola Bram Stoker. You have to do probably a couple of key Hammer ones. You have to do Interview with the Vampire, and I think you have to do The Hunger, to sort of get a sense of the evolution of the cinema.
Yeah, I check all those boxes. Now I do. The Hunger was, I guess, the last one on the bucket list.
There you go. Oh, I'm sure I'm forgetting other things in there too, but
sure.
Like the Dracula 2000, like, you know, no offense to Johnny Lee Miller and whatever, but no, you can fucking skip those. I would put the original Fright Night in there also.
Oh, really? I don't know if I've seen that.
The original, not the sequel, and definitely not the remake, which was garbage. And I went and saw that in the theater, I'm pretty sure. Because I had David Tennant basically playing Chris Angel. So how could you skip it? But you could skip it. But yeah, the original Fright Night. Again, it's goofy. I mean, the original, it's a horror comedy. But I think it goes in there.
The other side of the spectrum, we watched Ted Lasso, and we're caught up. So the new episode is out tomorrow. So we're all
you're ahead of me. I've only finished season one, and I only just today figured out that season two's not all out yet.
Right, we didn't figure it out until like 2 days ago.
Now I'm not sure.
Yeah,
I'm really surprised you jumped on that so quick.
It really came down, you know, like you were saying, you know, we're going to watch Foundation and it's not too that far away. So also we were curious. We have been for a long time curious about Dickinson. And so we've watched a few of those too. But yeah, we watched.
I am prepared. As I've said, I am too biased and emotionally invested. So I have no idea if the show is any good. So give me your take.
I know if it's any good. I mean
tell me how you feel about it. What I'm saying is I don't think you and I are going to have a problem if you're like, fuck that show. There are other shows that if you say that, I'm like, I'm driving to your house, punch you in the face. Yeah. This one, as much as I love it, if you hate it, I think I'll be okay.
No, we like it a lot. It's got a lot of great moments and good writing. I'd say it very much does land in that same space as A Good Place. Very much so.
It feels clever, but I'm just so caught up in being just so fucking happy. I watched the last two episodes back to back. Each of those episodes made me legit cry. And like happy tears, but like I got like honest tears. It was insane.
Well, but I often, the only sort of off aspect to it for me watching it is I can't believe it's popular. because I like it. And for all the reasons I like it, it's like, nobody would like this but me and Abby, you know.
I'm a little with you on that. I mean, I don't think it would be unpopular per se, but I don't know. I'm surprised it's the phenomenon it is. And I think it honestly may be, after 4 years of Trump and with COVID, people just need something fucking happy. And I mean, like, that's the premise of the show. There's this guy and he's really nice. Like, that's the premise of the show.
It's a little more than that. I mean, when I'm watching it, I think of you a lot because I think, I think this, you know, this or that aspect of the show, the British aspects of it, I have to think you're really appreciating that. Maybe I don't understand, but I'm thinking to myself, Tony totally gets why that's.
It is fun, but it's not, you know, he doesn't have a particularly deep insight into British culture or anything like that. It's just the juxtaposition is fun and occasional turns of phrase are funny to me.
I think, like, when they talked about, well, I don't know. Maybe I don't know. I mean, because I've seen like 6 episodes in season 2, so I don't know if I want to talk about anything.
Yeah, careful. Don't
go there. I'll put it this way. Do you think, I mean, they tried to sell this in the show, so I don't know. I'm just saying, I think the show sort of indicates this, and maybe you can tell me what you think. I think the show sort of indicates that British culture is more cynical and... would be even more contrary to his optimism than American culture.
I think there is I think that is accurate in that there is a largely accepted school of thought along those lines. And I think I recently heard it best when somebody was trying to explain how British people's relationship with alcohol versus Americans' relationship with alcohol, because British people drink a lot, but even more so, drinking a lot is like normal. Like, it's if you drink, not even if you don't drink at all, but if you like don't drink much, you're kind of a weirdo in British culture. And the way it was explained, in this person explained it, Desiree Birch did on an interview I heard, because she's an American who now lives there, is she's like, America is younger and our imperialism is still too close to, like, the Brits had their big empire and now it's gone and it's been gone for a while. And so the British have less to prove and less of sort of an ego. But so I think there's a sort of, there's less shame in just saying, I just fucking need a drink to get through the day. And I mean, she didn't quite go so far as to say like the Brits have more given up, but I feel like that's a vibe culturally speaking, not individually speaking. And I think there is sort of that thing. And that, I mean, there's a lot tied into the concept of the British stiff upper lip and the fact that there are not a lot of people left who still remember the war, but a lot of people who talk like they did, and stuff like that. Well, and the final episode of the season is called The Hope That Kills You. And it's based on an actual British saying that it's the hope that kills you. And that becomes a whole thing. But I mean, and it's so not subtle as a show. I kept being amazed, like, major plot arcs would span 2 episodes and then be done, but I'm like, there's not a lot of episodes going here, we kind of got to do this. And everybody in it is just fucking amazing. And the guy who plays Nathan, Nick Mohammed, I knew him before as a comedian, but he's a character-based comedian, so I'd only ever seen him on shows, like on talk shows and panel shows, playing characters that he had that were very goofy and hilarious. And so it's really interesting to see him in sort of a real character. But if you haven't seen it yet, look up the honest trailer for Ted Lasso, because I watched it, and I'll be honest, it was the final thing that pushed me into watching the show. Because it just made it look so great. But what I love is sometimes honest trailers do things instead of talking about people, they talk about things that reoccur. And so they had one in this, like not seeing your boss's laptop, because Rebecca always closes her laptop as soon as, but they had one that was pointing at people when they say something funny. And it was this whole montage. And it's a thing when somebody does a good quip, whoever it is will be like, I mean, it's usually Ted, but, and I like going in, seeing that, I saw it so much and I just loved it every time. And I've started doing it. Like Trish makes a good joke and I'm just like, and it just balances so fucking well. And I did not. So there's only two actual women in season one. There's a couple that show up every once in a while. There's two in the main ensemble. And I noticed in the credits, there was a woman named Juno Temple who got the with credit. And I foolishly assumed it must be the older of the two women because she would be a more accomplished actress. And then one time we were dealing with the younger one and I'm like, I fucking really like her. I should look up who she is. And I looked her up and she was the one. And I found out she has had a very prolific career in a bunch of stuff I know, just coincidentally things that I've never seen.
She was in Dirty John. That's one of the things she was in. She was really good in that.
And she was apparently a huge get for the show. And she's fucking amazing. Like you watch the pilot and you're like, oh crap, I've seen this character. I don't like this character. Why do we have this character? She's fucking amazing.
Yeah, I mean,
she's such a perfect blend of trope and trope subversion in just such a great combo.
Really, all the characters are so well drawn and acted. It's just amazing.
Yeah. And the characters, you're like, oh, they're going to be throwaway, or oh, they're like, no, they all have their fucking arcs, including people that I didn't even. Like, I'm like, that's a side character. And then something happened with them. And I'm like, oh, my God, I'm so invested in this. And I don't really understand why, but they always have been there. Just, I mean, the dialogue is gold.
Yeah, it's very, very well
written. Dialogue is amazing.
Very well written. Yeah.
And for a guy that I don't, like on paper, I do not relate to Ted Lasso hardly at all. He's very much a man's man in a lot of ways that I just don't vibe with. And I also think T is wonderful. And yet I love him so much. And I consistently love him so much. And it's kind of, and it's not like I would ever want to be that guy, but I would absolutely want to hang out with that guy. Like, yeah. And even shit like Coach Beard, who has a beard, and his name is actually Coach Beard. And
like one of the things I like too is they do that thing that I often don't like, where someone will tell a joke that they shouldn't tell, and then they'll talk about how they shouldn't have told it.
Yeah.
That's supposed to kind of cover up for the fact that they shouldn't have told it. That's kind of pushing it in my view, but in general, that sort of speaks to how they deal with masculinity in the show. I know that's probably a dumb thing to talk about, but
so much true. The show is so much about that and picking apart masculinity, but while acknowledging and validating it. And that's why it works, because Ted Lasso, like I said, very much a man's man. And a lot of things come up where it's not just like, oh, you said that thing, we're not supposed to say that anymore. It's more like, oh, you said that thing. I get it. That's a thing we say. And I kind of get why. But nowadays, we probably shouldn't, for these good reasons, and maybe go this way with it. Like, it's more open and honest, and it's not choosing sides so much.
Sure. But it's also, there's also more like the Diamond Dogs, you know, and when when they get together and the things they talk about, it's like, well, that's a very cool.
I love the Diamond Dogs so much. I love
that's a very
so
cool
much.
Way to show men interacting, which I don't think is unrealistic or anything. No. It's just you don't often see that.
And there's a bit one time where Ted thinks one of the other men may be giving him a pet name, and it turns out it wasn't. It was part of what he was saying. And he makes sort of a little joke about, like, I'm disappointed. I kind of thought that would be a cool thing to start. And, like, it's not homoerotic or uncomfortable. It's very much just that'd be kind of fun. That'd be, and it has a couple of callbacks and stuff. I think that's the thing. It has a very serious critique of masculinity without at all insulting or looking down on masculinity.
Well,
and then, I'm not sure any show has ever pulled that off.
Arguably the most stereotypical and tropish man in the show, that would be Roy, has some amazing moments. Like when he reads
Roy, the book, don't spoil it. But yes.
He's got a great relationship with his niece and things like that. And it's
it's amazing.
And
it's
again, amazing. I don't think this is unrealistic. I think this is how men actually live, but you almost never see it. You know, almost never see these types of portrayals of men interacting with one another, interacting with women, interacting with you know, nieces and daughters or whatever. It's like, okay, I mean, this is nice. You know, I think this is good while not
taking anything away. Again, like, there's no feminizing of these men. at all. Still dudes. They're totally dudes. Which is why I would almost think it's weird for me, because I'm very not dude. That was the wrong word, but you know, dude-ish. There we go. I've talked about this before in my gaming group now. I'm technically the only man left.
Oh yeah, right.
But I'm also, we believe, the girliest member of my gaming group. And we established a long time ago who the broiest member of our gaming group are. And it is a cis woman. And she takes it. She's like, absolutely. Yeah. So yeah, there is that. But yeah, I just like that. And it's just, I feel like it is clever, but it's just so positive, but not saccharine. Sickly sweet or anything.
Well, they don't avoid. I mean, there's some real conflict shit happens in there. Yeah. They don't avoid anything. They don't, like, you know, you can't predict, this good thing is going to come from this. No, because a lot of times it doesn't.
And it doesn't have to go dark. Well, this happened. Here's how we're going to try and deal with it.
Yeah.
And I mean, there are a couple of surprising notes to the end of season one that I got to admit, I'm a little bit like, what's going to happen there? I'm not super worried because this is a great show and I'm happy. Like, I'm not like biting my fingernails about it, but there are some things that I'm like, that is not, we still have some problems there to deal with. And I think there is a central conflict to the show. Like I said, the premise is that he's nice, but the other premise is that nice and effective in the role he takes are not necessarily the same thing. And sometimes those come into conflict. And how do you deal with that? And that is a very interesting conflict.
This is going to feel really uncomfortable for me to say for some reason, but Abby thinks that I'm a lot like Ted. And there are things that happen that I can really relate to, including what you just mentioned. The thing about, you know, when you're nice, or when you're trying to be, like, one of the things he talks about is, you know, it's not about winning or losing, it's so on and so forth, which that's totally how I would approach things. But at the same time, you know, this is their livelihoods, you know, and so on and so forth. So it's like, is that really the best way to go? And how are you going to resolve that, you know, issue?
Yeah.
And when I was a manager, I ran into that kind of thing.
Oh yeah, you did.
And so I'm, you know, I'm watching this, and there's a lot of things that happen to him or situations he has to go through, and it's like, it just hits me. It's like, ooh, I remember something like that. And it can be pretty powerful to watch.
And when you think about it, it's a classic conflict story. You have your principles, and how do you go through life maintaining those when faced with situations that make that untenable? Yeah. Except usually that's a version of, here's somebody who's fairly just and ethical. And now we're going to watch them slowly corrupt it. And this is, here's somebody who just really wants the world to be happy and is faced with the fact that the entire world cannot be happy at all times and has to navigate the best path he can while staying true to himself. And it does that.
But not by himself. I mean, a lot of times those
narratives.
A lot of times those narratives you're talking about where a person just slowly gets corrupted or whatever, they're also struggling alone. They can't talk to anybody or they don't feel
they frequently choose that position. Yeah. And that's a lot of the thing too. I mean, this gets tossed around a lot. There is a found family vibe running through this.
Yeah, there absolutely is. Yeah.
And I really enjoy it. And there's no weak points. There are no weak actors or weak characters. I could tell you who my least favorite character is easily, but they're still great.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not into them as much as others. And some of it is, again, like a lot of these characters we had to sort of subvert in certain ways. And this particular character, and I don't want to spoil things, so I'm not going to say it, but this particular character is a little too familiar and is not a bad character, but it's just, I've seen this before. Whereas everything else is just constantly, oh, didn't think of that. This is the really weird thing. This show reminds me so much of Arrested Development, but it's like the anti-Arrested Development. It's like, what if we did Arrested Development, but instead of it being these people are all so terrible and hijinks ensue, it's these people are all pretty much good at heart and hijinks ensue. But like the vibe and the rhythm and stuff like that just reminds me of Arrested Development.
I mean, it always makes me think of A Good Place. I just think it really hits
There's definitely that vibe.
Maybe that's
what it is. It's Arrested Development and Good Place. Man.
Do people in Britain like it or not like it? Or do you have any idea about that?
I don't know at this point. I'm waiting on most of the media about it. There are so many. Like, the internet talks about the show a lot. But I'm avoiding most of it because I don't want to spoil for myself. But I do, including hints that maybe essentially Jason Sudeikis made this show, like that this was his baby originally. I'm seeing hints of that, which would be very, like, this is making me fall in love with Jason Sudeikis. I've always thought the man was talented, but I didn't like most of the things he chose to be in. This, I'm like, holy shit, this is amazing.
It's really clever. I mean, there's constantly things that happen that you didn't see coming or whatever.
And I'm always smiling. I'm never not smiling. Literally the part where I was crying, I was still smiling. I'm always smiling. I laugh a fair bit, but even when I'm not laughing, I'm just grinning my ass off.
Yeah. Yeah, we like watching it.
It's to the degree that I'm like, I hope it doesn't get too many more seasons.
Yeah.
Because already a debate. Like, is Ted Lasso still, you know, on its right path? And I'm like, I'm not getting into this debate. But now I'm nervous. I'm like, what's second season? Well, and I also feel like this is a show I may immediately start rewatching.
If it is like The Good Place, it's, you know, they should have an idea of when they want to end it, what they want to do, and they should do that. I mean, that's always the smart thing to do. And I thought Good Place was consistent all the way through, really. I mean, there were some seasons I liked better than others, but by the time we got to the end, I thought, yeah, that was a good run. There was never a time where I thought they jumped the shark or anything else.
Every Good Place season, including the first, I started off thinking I didn't like this season. And then it convinced me otherwise.
Yeah, yeah. That's pretty much how it went. Yeah.
Every single, I was like, oh, wait, what? Oh, no, it's good. And not that those first episodes were bad, but just that I was like, oh, God, I don't like where we're going. Oh, we're not going there. Okay.
Yeah, right.
Like every time.
Yeah. No, but yeah, it's good. We like watching it.
Yeah.
It's a little uncomfortable for me sometimes, honestly, but I think that's just because I got stuff to work through.
Well,
it's like therapeutic, really.
Like, I mean, I wouldn't say you're definitely him, but I think you share similarities with him that not a lot of people do.
Well, for one, I would never coach sports. I mean, I would never, there's a lot of things that we don't have in common.
And he has to deal, but he also has to deal with shit that can be rough. And I mean, he gets through it and you know, he's fairly emotionally mature, but he absolutely has blind spots and they hit him.
Right. Well, you know,
and that resonating with you, I could absolutely get.
He talks about hope a lot. You know, I don't know if you remember, but I had something posted on my wall at work about hope. I had a t-shirt that I made at Cafe Press. It said, "Hope never hurt anyone." I mean, hope is my big thing too. So
if I say it's hopeless right now, are you going to run? Am I going to hear you go?
Then go get a sign that says believe that I have on my mirror.
On your bathroom mirror. Okay. We are really coming. We're doing too much.
Oh, we didn't even talk about your week either.
Cause I want people to get into it. There's not a lot to talk about in my week. I started playing a game a while back called Pyre.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Yeah, it's very interesting. It's a very story-driven game. Very story-driven. That's kind of the point. And it's one of those that you get to know very... And this is from Supergiant, who made Bastion and Transistor and other things. This is kind of their style. But you start off knowing very little. And in fact, the point of the game is to slowly learn more about like your traveling companions and things like that. And it's very interesting, which is funny because when you get to the actual gameplay part of it, it's basically a sort of post-apocalyptic fantasy version of 3-on-3 basketball that I honestly don't find that much fun. But that's like such a small part of the game. And I just set the difficulty to easy and I don't have a lot of trouble with it, but. And like, there's a whole thing where like your characters all have an enlightenment meter. And like, as that goes up, they like learn things about themselves, learn about them. And the art style is amazing. So it's kind of fun. There's not a lot else to talk about right now. We are still watching Hacks on HBO Max. And I like it. I don't love it. I thought I was going to love it. I don't love it at this point. I still like it and I'm still going to watch it. If there's another season, which I imagine there will be, I'll watch it. It's a little, as per usual with me, most of you could probably guess this, it's a little too much everybody's jerks. And like, we do get to sort of sympathize with, I mean, it's sort of there is sort of an arc to most episodes. Like, everybody sucks. Everybody's, oh, maybe not as much. And it's there and it's holding me on. But I'm like, maybe Ted Lasso is messing me up. I'm like, I don't like spending a lot of time on how shitty these people are.
Need to read Wrinkle in Time.
It is good and I like it. Fuck you, man. If you spoil things.
Thing?
God damn it. If you ruin Ted Lasso for other people, I think we have to kill you. Anyway, we're also watching Leverage. Did I tell you we're watching the new season of Leverage?
No, you didn't tell me that.
Oh my God. Yes, we're watching the new season of Leverage. Other than the first 20 minutes of the first episode, which is bad because they have to sort of establish where things are. And so they try and get like emotional in a way that show cannot hold. Like, it tries to give it emotional weight on a level that I'm like, you can't do this. You're not good enough for this. After that point, it's just Leverage. And I love that. It's 100% a nostalgia IV drip for me, but I'm loving that. Trish is having a harder time. I think Trish romanticized old Leverage a little bit. Like, Leverage is a heist show, and Leverage has always been a pretty bad heist show in that the heists sort of don't make sense and involve a lot of hand waving and shit. That's not why you watch Leverage. You watch Leverage for the character relationships and the witty banter. And this has it in the exact same, it's the same beats as before. All of it is just nostalgia. But if you like the old Leverage, you will like the new Leverage. Little goes a long way. We watch about one episode, maybe two a week. Like you stretch it out, but I am enjoying that. We're still getting our way through the last season of Kim's. I think we're almost done. And then we're watching Brand New Cherry Flavor. Talk about this.
We saw that.
Have you seen, you saw the whole thing? It's weird as fuck.
Yep.
I am pleased. Literally the last episode we watched, second to last, we watched two in a row. I was like, okay, we've done a lot of establishment now. Shit needs to start happening or else I'm going to be bored. And then shit started happening. So I feel better. It's very odd. I suspect it is the most fun Catherine Keener has ever had in her life.
Probably.
She gets to play this creepy Los Angeles 90s witch lady. And it just is so, looks so fun. She absolutely gets to gnaw on the scenery. And I think it must be a blast. And I told you, right. So the lead was the lead in Alita Battle Angel.
Correct.
But it's hard to tell that because her eyes are normal sized.
She still has pretty big eyes, though.
Didn't recognize her at all in that. Trish fucking nailed the joke while we were watching it. She's like, I just started noticing this. Actors tend to have whites all around their eyes that you can see. What is that about? And so we're talking about it, and I was doing like, and we were like, is it because they're also pretty, so they don't have saggy eyelids, or is it like, is that a sort of thing you learn in acting school, or is it a thing that like people who do that somehow are predisposed? I don't know. So we're talking about it, and then we cut to, and then we're just watching the show again, and after about 10 minutes in, there's this thing on the floor, and we go over to it, and it's an eyeball with the root still hooked, it like somebody's eye had been popped out, and she's like, see, like that, you can see the white all around it, that's what I'm talking about. And I lost my shit. I was so proud of her. I laughed through like two scenes. I was like, that was good, that, well done.
What's her name, that the gal that's the lead?
Salazar is the last name.
Yeah, she's amazing.
She's so different from Alita Battle Angel. I didn't recognize. But the guy playing Lou Burke, who I've seen before, he's also like, he is the scummiest character in the history of the world, but he's really doing a good job at it.
What's his name?
I don't know, but he was very familiar looking.
He's been a lot of things. When I first saw him, I thought, oh, this guy. And I thought maybe he'd die kind of early because he's kind of that caliber. But he's excellent. He's fantastic.
And he's really doing a good job with it. It's freaky as hell. It's very horror. It's very horror. Fun fact for people who haven't seen the show. It has way more puking up cats than you would expect. Fun fact for people who have been watching the show. That wasn't CGI. They made her vomit up cat puppets. Those are practical. Yeah.
That's commitment right there.
Now, I don't know what that means because we just recently saw the time when she doesn't vomit up a cat. And Jesus Christ, was that some Lynch and Cronenberg got together and said, let's fuck with Tony's head kind of bullshit there. Wow.
Now that I think about it, I'm a little surprised.
Body horror in the show.
Oh yeah, there really is. Yeah, yeah.
Well, and it wasn't supposed to be us. Trish saw the trailer for it and was like, I think Tony might like this. And so she showed it to me and I'm like, I think I might, I'm gonna watch it. And so one night we were done watching stuff and she's still in here and I'm like, I'm gonna watch the first episode. And then I noticed she's just staring at the screen, and afterwards I was like, shit, I have to watch this with you, don't I? She's like, I think so. So now we're doing it. Yeah, I don't know, I'm enjoying watching it. I still think it's entirely possible by the end I will hate it.
Yeah, I wonder about that.
It's very male perspective 90s horror. It's a novel written by a dude, and like everything about the main characters are mostly women, but I'm like, a dude definitely wrote this. It very much has that vibe.
set in the 90s or something.
Set in 93. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's another
possibly the novel was written then too. I don't know.
Sometimes I wonder if there's two things I think when people, because it's kind of a trend now to set things back in the 90s or something. And there are two things that I often think are the reason. One, so they don't have to do with cell phones in the plot, because cell phones ruin every single plot, really. And two, so they can get by with some sexist and racist stuff that they can't get by with anymore.
I have assumed that also, with the third possible exception of, again, nostalgia sells. And so there are sometimes things where they're like, oh, remember this time period? And so that's the thing. But I've now come up with a fourth thing, actually partially based on this show. It also may be because that's when the author was the age of the main characters. Because, like, for example, my debut novel, which should be out in a matter of weeks now, I'm just waiting on the cover art, is set not in a specific time, but essentially the present day, with a woman in her 20s. And I have concerns about how the dialogue works and the things to, because it is partially based on my life when I was that age. And I'm worried that it's going to come off as a little anachronistic. My other novel I've been working on, Becca James Lowenstein, Queen of the Space Pirates, exclamation point, which is not dead. I know I paused on it. It's definitely not dead. It takes place in space, but our main character was born and raised on Earth. In fact, the book takes place in an unspecified time because it has nothing to do with Earth anymore, so we don't know how long it's been. And for reasons, most of the characters aren't aging normally, so that's a thing. I very specifically made it so that she left Earth being in about 1999, being about the age I was in 1999. So that insofar as there are social references, and for the most part there won't, because again, we're not there. They stop at that point. And that was an incredibly deliberate choice.
Clever.
And so I think some of that may be a thing, like I could see that in Brand New Cherry Flavor. It also may be that the book was written in the 90s, I don't know. But that the author's like, you know, when I was the age that I would have been, obviously, you know, it's all fantasy or whatever, but the age that, like, I was this age or whatever was then. So I'll just set it then. Which I kind of am in favor of a lot of ways, because I it feels a little disingenuous to try and claim I have the perspective of a young person now. I mean, I don't think it's unfair. I mean, I don't think it's like, oh, you shouldn't write that. Like, we can extrapolate in the same way you can write about characters that aren't you. In fact, most of them probably wouldn't be about you. But I do see it as a useful tool to be like, you know, write what I know. And I know being a young person in the 90s, so that's what I was. So, I mean, we're assholes. We're over time and we haven't even touched the question. And I debated just making it a 2-hour thing or something, but I don't think so. I think you're going to have to wait an extra week. I mean, longtime listeners should not be surprised. Also, the way it's been working lately, longtime listeners are 2 or 3 episodes behind. So by the time you get to this, you can just go to the next one and hear them. So it's fine.
Yeah. You don't have to listen.
I wouldn't go that far. You have to listen. Listen, because this looks extra dumb if we're literally putting this out on the internet and nobody's paying any attention. So let's
find out. It's like a lot of other things on the internet.
Yeah. In the meantime, though, we're gearing up for that format change. So write us some emails, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, I mean, if you've seen Ted Lasso, let's talk about it on the blog. But again, let's avoid spoilers. The rest of you, go fucking see Ted Lasso. Do it now. Right now. Don't even listen to the last part of this episode. Just go watch Ted Lasso. I'm so glad you watched it though, because this is the thing. I've been like, there's nobody I can talk to about this show, and that sucks. But now I can talk to you about this show.
Yeah, you can talk to me.
And then, yeah, listen again next week. Do fun things in the meantime, and get ready, because soon my book will be published and y'all have to buy it. It's probably going to be like either $3 or $4. So budget that accordingly now. Some of you might get free copies. I don't know. I haven't figured that out yet, but supposedly it's not too hard to do. So I think my editors might get free copies, but we'll have to see. Just in case, get your $3 or $4 ready. And also, boycott Febreze? I don't know.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.